Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Getting It Right with Dr. Bowles is where you are tuned in. I hope all is going well with you. I have had a fantastic day here in Alexandria, Louisiana. I am beginning to enjoy my leisure, and it took me a while to fit into my new schedule and my new lifestyle, but I'm starting to really have fun. Why am I saying all this? Well, I had something every day of this week all the way through to Sunday, and they were requests. And as I started to speak to my co-host, Cassandra, you've met her on a number of shows previously, I went to a session on Tuesday night. And this is how I was motivated by the topic, which today's topic is traumatic stress and Black America. In the Tuesday evening conference, we had a very austere judge present who is over 9th District Court here in Alexandria, very active in the community and trying to prevent child abuse and domestic abuse and a whole lot of issues that have to do with children. And the topic of the night, Tuesday night, was traumatic stress. Now, for those of you who are not familiar, traumatic stress is not new. In fact, in my medical school days, which was 1985 to 89, we talked about toxic stress. And now they're saying traumatic or toxic stress is also used. But there is a new agency for the Department of Health and Hospital Services, DHHS, that's called ACE. And ACE stands for Adverse Child Experience. And I sat through a rather dynamic PowerPoint presentation. They did a duo between a director at a local library and the judge I spoke of, and they gave all of these adverse consequences of when children see bad things, when children see their parents fighting, when they see all kinds of issues. But the way in which this was slanted had to do with only domestic or in-home situations. No one dared talk about the ghetto-type setting where a child might see a sibling killed or in the street kind of aggression where policemen may shoot an unarmed man and et cetera. Well, I listened to all the presentation. They did a great job. They have money, like I said, from DHHS. It's now on the agenda to have trained counselors, you're listening, Cassandra, go forth into the community and talk about toxic stress and traumatic stress and be the soldiers to prevent traumatic stress from happening among children in various communities. Before we get into today's presentation, let me step back and say, I'll place my clinical hat on. There was a study of epigenetics. Now, epigenetics has to be 50 years plus old. It's not a new science. It's not a new discipline. When social scientists were really revered, and I would say that was the early 60s through the early 80s, when you had the Skinners and others telling people how to raise their children and how to discipline their children, and there were all kind of studies out, and universities were known for their sociologists, and I think that was the era when there was a Nobel Prize even given for social science. Well, epigenetics describes that not just what you are genetically programmed with, DNA, RNA, and so forth, but your environment can affect how this DNA is expressed. Now, in the 70s, like I said, this was a novel idea. But there were a number of studies done with identical twins who were adopted into separate families. And later in life, they went back and looked at what parallel and divergence these identical twins showed based solely on a different environment. And we certainly have the history back in the 40s during Hitler's time when they did a very aggressive and rather gross experimentation with identical twins. Okay, now I've laid the groundwork. How are you, Cassandra? Welcome to the show. And jump right in. If you had a chance to take a look at this, and as being a certified counselor and therapist, please come on board and make your comments.
Thank you. I'm doing well, Dr. Bowles. You are exactly correct in what you're saying. There's a lot of life issues, life domain issues that affect the general population, especially those who are of the low socioeconomic status. And there's trauma in the neighborhoods that every day. So, no, it's not the typical post-traumatic stress disorder you're not dealing with, not always, sometimes, the threat of death, but just the family dynamics and the stress of limited income and poor interpersonal relationships, relationships between mom and dad, relationships between siblings, relationship between neighbors, all of that with a limited income and sometimes limited amount of education in itself can be stressful because they don't have access or they don't know what resources are available to them. So all of it collectively adds to a sense of anxiety and hopelessness and helplessness in itself.
Well, certainly you summarized that perfectly. I keep my listeners informed kind of more than they may want to know, but I'm in the process of becoming a CASA representative. And for those who don't know what that is a court-appointed special advocate. I didn't know what the acronym was until I got involved. And I thought I'd go to a couple seminars and someone would say, okay, here's a child, go visit them and help them have a nice, healthy life. But that's not what happens anymore, Cassandra. They literally put us through classroom attendance. I will be going to class number 4 tonight. And it usually it's a class held between 2.5 and 3 hours. There are some role-playing, there are some case studies, and we have guest speakers, we have counselors. I'd never known the job of case investigator, but we had case investigators who spoke to us on last Tuesday. I think we will have a case coordinator that we'll hear tonight, as well as some of the role-playing. Now, what has come out to me, and I guess my class is probably 12, maybe 15 people. I'll have to be more attentive to the count tonight. But what is so interesting, and you may know this much more intimately than I, those who have lived in a nice home with either one or two parents, it didn't have to be two parents to be a nice, wholesome home, that have been shielded from hardship, and grew up and went on to advance educational levels, they have very strong opinions, and this makes me smile every time I hear some of my colleagues making their comments, strong opinions about poverty and maladjustment and anger management. And I know that experience is not the only teacher, and I'm not advocating you have to suffer to be able to talk about suffering, but it really does give me an itch I can't scratch when I hear people who've never had the experience, who have never lived the life, can have such strong opinion on how to fix, how to adjust, how to react to. And part of what I see this course doing, because I've had a number of courses similar to this on different circumstances, is they're trying to sensitize those who've had no personal experiences in these situations to what it does to you. In other words, how it modifies you. And that's kind of what made me want to talk about epigenetics, that everyone knows if you wear a shoe that rubs and you continue wearing that shoe, you'll develop a callus. And then the callus in itself becomes a problem. I use that example because I think that's what society ignores, at least when you're talking about the Black American majority looking at, the American majority looking at Black American situation here in the U.S., that if you are constantly under some pressure, and I'm not saying all pressure is outwardly imposed, as you may have read if you read the Marquis, there are some of us who teach oppression. I mean, the comment of how you have to behave. I've gone into settings and I feel so sad for young children who have no freedoms. The parent has told them, when you go in there, don't you touch anything, don't you talk to anybody, don't you. And you look at this child and I feel really sad because they're crippled. That natural inquisitive, that natural sense of growth that happens with new experiences, I mean, essentially shut down. Now, that's what I mean by teaching oppression. Now, the parent's intent, I am absolutely sure, is not to thwart the child's learning. But they do. So part of the problem when I'm dealing with population where I know of such things, I mean, my mother was a pincher. And as you know, Cassandra, there are 8 of us, and we sort of split into top 4 and the bottom 4. And when my mother traveled, she didn't have a car, and unless an uncle or someone who drove a taxi took us, we walked everywhere. And I can remember us walking, and she was like the duck with these little ducklings behind her. And before we left the house, we had all these rules. Don't this, hold this one hand, don't. And I can remember an episode in a Roses, because we didn't have department stores in small town Shelby when I was young. A Roses is like your Walmart, but much, 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 much smaller. I guess Roses is more like our Dollar General. And I don't know, I got magnified at looking at this lady with the cash register. She'd hit a button and a bell would ring, and so a little drawer would jump out. And Mom lost her gauge on me just long enough for me to get behind that counter and climb up and start trying to open the cash register. Now, you can imagine, this was in, let's say, late 60s, and South was very, very still segregated. In Shelby, North Carolina, little black children were not expected to be stammering around in a predominantly white environment exploring. So I got punished a number of times, and it's just amusing to me now, but I have to say it traumatized me. It made me reluctant to respond in a new environment. You know, someone can say, oh, come in, have a seat. I may hesitate. Or even as an adult, you know, if you're in a predominantly white environment, as I found myself often, I was likely to be more quiet, less interactive, because I had been taught that was the behavior expected of me in that environment. So with, again, Cassandra, am I laying that groundwork? When we talk about social groups or social services, or in the case of CASA, advocates, what do you feel, or do you feel, someone who has not had the real experience, day-to-day experience, are they, in your opinion, capable of rapidly adapting to become an advocate to someone coming out of an environment that they have no experience?
I believe that a person who has not had the adverse experience of childhood trauma and issues could be an advocate. It will require special training, education, and a sense of empathy and awareness of just mutual concern for another individual. It requires compassion, and it requires patience. What I find in the work that I do with the families that I work with is that I'm dealing with adults who have never reconciled with childhood experiences. They've been beat down by society, by life choices, by family members, by males, by females, and they have had to compromise their standards and their non-negotiables for survival. And what that does is it diminishes one's self-value, their worth, and their confidence. And once that is gone from an individual, even their sense of hope, capacity to rise to the occasion, all of that is gone. And you find people who have access to resources, but they're just not motivated because, as you stated about your experience in, was it Roses?
Yeah, Roses is a department store.
Yeah, in Roses. I want to make sure that shaped how you responded to similar situations even in your adulthood, that from that experience you were guarded and reserved. And such is with these individuals.
Well, what is interesting, and I like your terminology, non-negotiables, and that may be a topic that I'd like us to explore in future times. When I hear you say that, it makes me believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're talking about core values. I often tell people that in order to be who I am, I have to have some, in your language, non-negotiables. I have to know what it takes for me not to be sad, not to be angry, not to be hungry, not to be sleepy. And when you're under chronic traumatic stress, call it top, you don't even have a chance to identify your non-negotiables. Go ahead, please.
To the issues of women, it is not uncommon for women to have sexual relationships with the estranged fathers of their children for assistance with light bill or gas. So when I say non-negotiable and how it diminishes one's self-value and worth, you're looking at, do I have gas money? Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a roof over my head through low-income housing. Yes, I have a food stamp card, but I can't use those things to put gas in the car. That mm-hmm. does not pay the light bill. That does not pay the library book fees at school that the kids have. Oh, let me call the father for assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And the typical response is, what are you going to do for me? Now, mm-hmm. that may entail a sexual favor. It may entail doing laundry. You know, it can entail a lot of things. But what it does is it puts the female in a place of compromising her standards mm-hmm. and non-negotiable. And every time they're stripped inwardly, that diminishes the strength that they have to outwardly perform and be motivated. And so it's like a vicious cycle, a very vicious cycle.
Well, that is, I mean, you said it so well, and I had a chill for the thought, because you have the governmental assistance, and those who look down on the recipients of government assistance can't even fathom what you just described. You know, yeah, you're doing something, but you're not doing all. You're not restoring a family to the American dream standard because they get food stamps. There's so much more. I can very well empathize with that comment, and reason I got a chill. I've been mentoring off and on. I was very constitutive for a while, but I have to admit not quite as much now as I was a young lady with two children. And I can remember when we would be talking and I'd make a comment about, oh, is this child going to whatever, it was a church outing or something. She says, oh, I don't have the registration fee. And it would strike me, and I'm like, wow, I didn't even think about that. And your comment about food stamps won't allow you to do the $20 necessary for summer camp for 2 weeks to teach a child some skill they'd love to learn. If you don't have that $20, how do you expect to get it? You know, the American idea is you go to ATM and get money, but you got to have money in the bank to get money out of the bank. There are those who have no concept of what it would mean that you can't take someone to soccer lessons or ballet lessons, even if it were made possible, because it would burn the gas you might need to go to grocery store. See, these kinds of decisions or challenges, if you like, are not commonly known. And most of us, and I'll put us because I'm identifying with that downtrodden person, wouldn't just say that. You know, I know in our churches, and I'm sure if you're going to a black church, and I know your culture, so I can say this pretty freely talking to you, Cassandra, there are times when they go to the church and appeal, can you help me with my light bill? Or can you help me with this hospital bill? Because that was one of our few social structures that had a little bit of clout and had a little bit of monetary power in our neighborhoods. But what I'm seeing, and you can correct me if you've seen something else, our modern-day young people are not vested in the concept of the institution of church the way our parents were.
No, they're not. And what I'm finding is because of exploitation of church resources, you don't find as much help as you used to see as far as giving out cash or doing bill pay. You know, there's the clothes closet, the food bank, but there are now criteria, which there has to be a policy, a protocol for all things, but now I'm noticing that there are more criteria even for those resources, and now it's pretty much exclusively for members. So you have the unchurched.
You described a evolution, if you like, or an epigenetic. I'm going to pause you because I'm going to have you finish what you're thinking, so please don't lose your thought. When you were talking about the female who may have to compromise her core values to accommodate a situation, in that compromise is a recreation of a person. You're recreating a personality. You are instilling a kind of manipulation, although necessary at times, perhaps, You know, I've never been in a situation where I wanted something really bad and I compromised to do it. But if that person does it once and then twice and then three times and four times, you may have now created a new breed. You've created someone who is more manipulative than, say, that person's mother. So in the system's effort, if you want to call it an effort, to correct a social problem, they're actually creating a new type of citizen. And I certainly can say I've seen that. And so churches, like every other institution, have to protect themselves from that new person. It used to be, I mean, my mother would cook, and we'd pack a box and go to church because we were going to have homecoming or our revival or some kind of a social dynamic. And it was just understood. The women in the neighborhood, my mom would worry over it. You know, I got to get that pound cake cooked, and I'm going to cook one and leave it here. So don't you guys go in and eat up that cake when we get to the church. You know, it was this sense of duty to provide in that social setting. And now it's almost the opposite. They come to the church to see, what can I get? Can you give me new shoes? Can you give my child a donation? Can you pay for this? Can you give me an electric bill? So we've reversed what once was this well benevolence into, as we talked about, I think, a week or so ago, the sense of entitlement. And we've really, in this short conversation, shown the whirlpool where epigenetics, meaning environmental pressures or transmitting traumatic stress for whatever reason, has altered the character of a people. So what's your comment on that very circular discussion I just led?
You know, it's a lot. And going back to my previous thought and going to the churches, there's the unchurched. And the unchurched are those people who need help who do not have a church home or a church family. And they are oftentimes, if not turned away, not given the full benefit of resources because they are not a member. One of the things I must say about my church in Shelby, Faith Missionary Baptist Church, I've seen them give out donations that they have received not only to their members, but to other churches as well and individuals in the community. And that's a positive thing that I can give as a shout-out to Faith Missionary Baptist Church under the leadership of Dr. Anthony Nabenabor. But you don't always see that. You don't always see that. Another thing in going back to the recreation of a certain level of human being, because they have to be manipulative to get their needs met, that is true. All behavior is learned. And so when someone close to you, someone that you've been intimate with on an emotional level, on a physical level, on a spiritual level, when they exploit your hurt and your need for favors, for gain, that diminishes your outlook on the world as well as how you view yourself. And so, as I stated earlier, it becomes a very vicious cycle. Another thing about the population that we're referring to is those who are of the lower socioeconomic status, is that they are creative and they are very crafty about what their needs are and the things that they need to take care of. And one of the things that I admire is the resilience of the human spirit. And you'll see them braiding each other's hair. You'll see them sharing snacks with each other's kids. Even though you'll see them fuss and fight one day and the next day they're helping one another out. And so there is also a lot of positive things that's happening there, even in the dysfunction.
But you may see, you should have been at the meeting. I might need to talk to the HHS. You may should take up a spokesperson position. The other term you just used, resilience, and that was part of the topic of Tuesday night's discussion, that whenever you are traumatized, and I touched on it just lightly in the marquee, that the way that you start healing, well, the first comment is you can't heal if you're still bleeding. So if someone is injured, and the injury is not somehow assuaged, it has to be Either you get out of that environment, someone who cares about you talks to you, you are able to journal, you must somehow get out of the environment. Maybe not physically out of it, but you can psychologically get out of it. I mean, there's been times when you want to hear loud music, just turn up the music. I run off sometime and go to a safe club environment so I can hear music or get that vibration because I'm needing to stop the bleeding. So I don't think we talk enough about how to rescue ourselves from a bad situation again, Cassandra, that may be a topic for us. But in your comment of resilience, Tuesday night they talked about toxic stress, and they had a questionnaire, it was a survey. And you went through and answered questions, and based on your answer, you scored yourself a 1 to 3 on the type of answer you gave. Then, like you used to do, I don't know if you ever got as a child, the magazines would give these surveys, and you get your point, and it would tell you, you know, what kind of personality you had based on your points. Well, this is very similar. Like I said, this whole thing to me is a big throwback to the 80s. And when they took the scoring, they gave us our tally at the end of the class, and they were saying, well, there are quite a few of you who have large toxic stress levels. And so I made them quantify what is large, and they said 4 or greater. And then they went on to say, anyone who has a toxic level 4 have learned to compensate, and they are resilient because everybody in this room has some accomplishment. So they went on and on and on. And I didn't disrupt the conversation, but I did approach the organizers later, and I said, I'm going to make a comment. I've worked with DHHS. I said, I'm going to say, be careful with your survey. And they kind of looked at me and said, what do you mean? I said, those of us, and certainly I was in that number, who scored 4 or higher, do have compensating skills, and we've been able, sometimes it's even overachievement is our compensation. I said, but in your giving the survey, you may be doing some harm. And, you know, these are very academic and extremely young. Nobody there, I think, was 40. So I'm looking at a group who may have no experience whatsoever on victimization and how victimization can scar you for life. I said, someone with a score of 8 would have had many traumas. And one of their ways of coping may be minimization or denial. And in their ability to put these feelings in little packages and set them over in the corner, they've been able to become a sociologist, they become a counselor, they become a nursing assistant. And you, in this one short meeting, have sent them into their dark space. You have demanded they visit what they may not want to visit. But in the process of following through on what they're asked, you've sent them somewhere that you didn't help get them out of. And the one lady said, Dr. Bowles, we need to talk about this. I said, yes, you do, because I have 2 medical school friends who committed suicide, and it was following an exercise where this sociologist person just wanted to casually ask them questions, you know, what is your most traumatic childhood experience? And when this information was given for them to go and document it, they left this person in that bad situation. Maybe they hadn't thought about this traumatic experience for 15 years, and now you've cast them back into it, and there was no debriefing and no intervention. So when I mentioned this, the judge present says, Dr. Bowles, I'm so glad you brought this up, because there was this general feeling we could get a bunch of foot soldiers educated in ACE, like adverse child experience, and send them out and start eradicating ACE. And I'm saying, no, you're going to, like you said, meet some parents who've never dealt with their own childhood experiences, and you can do more harm than good. So I thought that was interesting that you talked about resilience, and that was certainly one of the topics that popped out in Tuesday, very short-lived, because that wasn't the intention of the organizers. Where Cassandra, guess what? We've run out of time.
We are out of time.
I tell you, we have to come back. There's so many points that was brought out in this conversation, but I thank you so much for joining me. And I do look forward, girl, to our next conversation, and you've just spurred all kinds of information in my head. So I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week. And to my listeners and to you, I say thank you so much for joining me. And until next time, take care. Bye now.